Hello and welcome to the AI Boardroom. Today we'll be talking about how to calculate ROI for AI projects. So we'll be sharing two methods with you for how you can figure out whether an AI project is worth investing in. And today, as usual, we have Edgar joining us. There he is.
Yeah, thank you very much for introducing us. Hello and welcome also from my side. Whew, been some time.
Yes, the last episode... please do not dislike the intro. We are really trying. We're trying our best to spice things up. Please let us know if you like this type of intro, if you like us to spice things up a little bit. But
it definitely helps to ask for...
If you appreciate the spice up, please give us a thumbs up because truly appreciate it. We do it for you.
Okay. ROI. What's funny, you came up with this, and I think 1 or 2 days later, I went through my LinkedIn feed and just had some conversation with people like ROI, working with AI. One was even saying, I still don't get over it. Like, he was saying AI is like raising all boats equally. And I was like, what? So if you take this argument, we don't need to do software in companies at all. Everyone has access to software. So where's the benefit? Yeah. I tried to explain it to him and his only answer was, yeah, I wish you good luck with that. Like, I did like half a page of a message, explained everything, gave him examples, and he was like, okay, screw you.
Best of luck with you and your AI.
And I was like, yeah, thank you very much. The thing is, he was in legal. And if I were in legal, I would be really worried.
Yeah.
But that's a topic for another day. Yeah.
And I think we, just two perspectives, because I think we just kind of chatted before starting. So really, I think that there's two situations for why, from what I'm seeing, is why people want to figure out what ROI is for certain projects, because one, they don't know how to calculate it. So small firms, and they have out-of-the-box solutions, they're looking for inspiration and they're looking in the industry. And as you mentioned before, those kind of use cases are quieting down because probably a lot of people are already adopting things. So there's just no, it's old news at this point, the out of the shelf. And then the people who are implementing it, they may sometimes lack the talent in-house. So they pause projects, they don't take them and scale them across the enterprise. So they never realize ROI and they've been burned by some of those solutions. And yeah, there's just like the realization of those solutions. But you made a really interesting point. And this is something where I operate on the daily. You do have companies who are actually implementing AI as part, like core part of their operations. So it's part of their intellectual property. So it's in their best interest of not actually like disclosing what efficiencies or sometimes how they're implementing things, because that's going to invite questions and that's going to invite other things for people to inquire into. So there's a lot of, I could say, especially big companies that are doing with AI and they're getting a lot of efficiencies. So if you look at the Fortune 500 kind of reports on AI and that adoption, like amazing numbers, like in the 60s, 70s of adoption, but you're not seeing that.
You have to be fair. I've looked that up too, because I was curious, like we are so deep into this, like there has to be some, like, let's say normal company or not like huge mega corporation company who actually benefits from it. Most of these are questionnaires to the people. And the people saying like my productivity gain is like, or 70% of people say that they gained a lot of productivity. That's what the numbers say. And I was like, okay, I get why people don't care. Like you can't connect this to ROI because this is completely subjective. So what's the objective number? And one way I always try to at least picture it for someone is if you have someone in sales and he makes 20 calls a day and he has to prepare these calls, now you get AI in helping him with the preparation. Now he gets not 20, but 25 calls a day. You have a 20% increase. Like closing rate stays the same. Everything stays the same. He just gets more things, stuff done without doing anything else. If you then just add maybe a better quality and also repeatable and improvable system on vetting your leads, then you might increase your overall closing rate too. And then it compounds. And you have these like strings of small gains, which compound to huge gains where you have, sometimes you can double your sales or double your profit per invested dollar or something. That's really where the magic is. And I think is that's why I'm so reluctant to accept the Copilot way Microsoft promotes. Is all the solutions you can build with the Copilot are either needing like huge expertise outside of Copilot and then integrating it into it, or you're just stuck with insufficient tooling to actually get something useful from it, except of reading documents. Like, it's hugely beneficial reading documents. I think that's already a huge improvement for a lot of companies, don't get me wrong. But is it worth like $35 a month per user? I don't know.
So I think with solutions that are out of the box, I think intuitively, it's hard to use out of the box. There is a learning curve that you have to adapt to those new tools. You have to maybe sometimes customize or maybe retrain yourself to a new process. And so you're losing efficiencies because of that learning curve. So you're not able to maybe, again, demonstrate some of the promised ROI initially, because you do have to adjust your own process and you have to adapt to those systems. I think the unique aspect of building something that is completely customized is that you can keep your existing process if it works well, and you can basically expedite certain aspects of your workflow with a custom solution. And that's why I think for this reason, I think integrating solutions, especially AI solutions, into the workflow is so important, because you're not losing those kind of learning efficiencies. You're not, if the process works, there's no reason to break it. But if it helps to bring velocity to that process, to bring more capacity, which AI can do that completely at scale, why not? And I think this is where both of us kind of shine, is by building those AI custom solutions to understand the workflow, understanding what works, what is the unique aspect of the business that could be streamlined more. It's not sometimes putting more people to actually increase capacity. Sometimes you can do that with technology. Yeah,
this so I think that also that highly personalized, or like not personalized, but like optimized for the company. And that's why I'm always struggling with the Copilot approach, who says, yeah, we like off-the-shelf solutions, because I think they won't be able to deliver properly. Or you have to add a lot of customizability, which I think is not the actual plan. That's why I'm over and over again end up just doing my own stuff and deploying that instead. It's not that I don't want to. I'd love to have something where I can just like quickly come up, sketch something. I would love to have my Apple Pencil to use, like just to stretch down something, and then AI builds the workflow for me, for example. And I'm pretty sure there are stuff like Zapier actually has this. You can type into Zapier, that's what I want to do, and then AI tries to build you up a workflow. Yeah. So if you don't want to do like the whole way, like the proper AI, then at least do some workflows. You can also, if you're on the Microsoft side, use Power Automate. Like these stuff is, there's not a lot of magic in the overall like single parts, but they have to work together. And that's the other thing. You won't get an ROI when you're not implementing stuff properly and break down problems properly. To give you an example, if you, like, I also talked to someone in finance, and she was like, yeah, in finance, like AI delivers great results and we are going to the future, but it's not working for finance. And I was like, what exactly does not work for you? Like, what would be your wish? And she was like, yeah, I would love to just hand over a pile of data and then ask, do something with it. And I was like, yeah, okay, I get this. And that's actually what Gen AI is good for. because what Gen AI can do, and that's part of the solution design, is break the stuff up. If you get the question, I had this on stream. I had like, how was the product launch? That's the question. It's in and of itself, it's ambiguous and can be anything. If I ask someone on the street, he will be like, what are you talking about? But if you go ahead and break it down, you have different information in there. You like, one information is, okay, we have a new product. Means I can look up the marketing campaigns or our product list, which is the newest product, and then at least find out which product he means. Then how did it go means, okay, how were the sales? How was the ad spend that got us to the sales? Did we actually make a profit? So that's all the questions you can get from it. And that's something your AI has to do. If you have an AI workflow, you have to, and you want ROI from it, you have to do these steps. I said it like 10 times on the stream. You have to put in the work. That's actually important, because if you don't do it, then you come up with a lackluster system which only gets 60% of the work done, and you don't have any benefits. If you want ROI, you need to get this number up and get to in the 70, 75, 80s. And from the 80s, it's really valuable already. But that's where you need to get. And that's the only way how you can also reduce the consequences from failing processes. So, and there will be failing processes. Like, it won't be 100% for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. I think, and I think just to, maybe there's a common saying that says, yeah, you can add AI to a broken process, it's just going to get worse, basically. So I think, and I think what you're saying, and that maybe caveat things in a different way. So you can't actually throw data at generative AI and just like very randomly just ask for it to derive insights. I think there's a use case for it. How useful it actually is and how practical really depends. But ultimately, whatever you end up doing with it, you're putting it through some sort of filter. Whether you do that before you prompt the system or you actually do it after you see all of the insights, you're still curating some part of that list, those insights that are useful for a particular purpose. So there's, and that kind of comes from education, how to use these systems. Sometimes it's just better and more efficient to direct the system to give you a specific outcome you're looking for, instead of playing this guessing game of what the AI system thinks you're looking for. And very similar in, you can't just throw all kinds of data and ask, I think in your example, me going to you and selling, like, hey, can you give me, tell me how to sell a product? Some of the best practices, going to be, you're going to be like, is this a physical product or is this a digital product, right? There's this new, different nuances you have to specify. And very similar with AI systems, there's almost like some guide to how to extract the most value out of those systems. And they are well aligned to the type of techniques. Again, machine learning, knowledge graphs, they come with their own kind of specifications and best practices for you to extract the value. So of course, if you're not using them per their instructions, they're not going to give you the best results that you're looking for. And you're going to blame the system for not working well. Whereas, as you mentioned, you have to put in the work to actually read the manual and to actually use it appropriately and put it in the right context, put it in the right workflow, contextualize it, and then personalize the results if needed. But garbage in, garbage out. But you got to have to put in the work.
You need to understand this whole way that these things work is built for being generic. It's generative, but it's also generic by design, because you have a huge, like, I compared it to a cloud that's raining over the ocean. That's AI in its most simple state. And if you only ask like a simple question, which is completely ambiguous and don't have any details and no context at all, you only go out with your ship and you get wet, but you don't even know where you are. So you have to get this on land, and you have to narrow down the cloud so that it rains exactly where you want it to rain. So that's basically how you have to imagine it. And that's only achieved if you provide the right context. And because we said it, like, of course, you can ask any question, but if it's ambiguous, you have to design your AI, you have to design your AI system in a way where it actually can ask back questions and is not inclined to just generate anything, and because that's going to fail most of the time. So it has to be an interaction, it has to be a conversation. You wouldn't dare to employ someone new. He comes in the first day and he has to know everything. Like, you also would give him some context so that he can work with. And that's how you have to view it a bit more with AI sometimes.
And I think just to maybe summarize some of these points, like, why is this important? I think that there's inherently a learning cycle that you have to go through AI, and part of it is setting realistic expectations. You hear that a lot, but what does that mean? You can't it's not a plug and play solution that you plug in these AI systems and then make them available Copilot through everyone's computer and then the month see the immediate results. They do take time to actually realize, and we'll speak about kind of the frameworks for what we came up with it. You have to set realistic timeframes. So you're not going to see immediate returns in weeks or maybe even months sometimes, depending on how complex the system, how long the cycle is for you to realize some of those returns. But you also have to take into account the learning curve of your employees actually getting accustomed to that system. So they do tend to, if you ever see AI adoption curves, they do tend to be quite slow at the beginning. And then you get into this flywheel, which the more users, the more data, the more kind of better algorithm, better quality data. And then you basically reach that exponential scale where you, your system, your organization truly benefits. But you have to go through that initial cycle. I would say it's common to all systems or all AI systems that there is a learning curve, whether it's Gen AI, again, and some of the other solutions that I've mentioned.
You already started. So what we brought with us today are basically two methods on actually calculating stuff, which we want to briefly go over. If you want to have some more in-depth information on how this works, we have some reference to it in the end of the video.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you are mostly the author of this, Svetlana, the stage is yours.
All right. So there's really two methods, as we talked about. So one is called the comprehensive ROI. Again, you'll get the details of the step-by-step with examples in our comprehensive guide. We'll link it up, link it down in the comments, or have a link, I think, at the end of the video that you could click. So the comprehensive ROI, think about it this way. So if you have some metric to go against, so maybe it's sales figures that, or maybe ROI assessments that other companies have shared commercially in the past, and you've seen those costs, cost savings, or maybe revenue increases. What was the third one? Or the time savings. Use that as an anchor to your basically ROI calculation. You have some baseline to compare your ROI results to. With the second approach, which we're calling incremental ROI, you don't necessarily have any sense of how much improvement you can gain with that system, but what you do know is the value of a percentage increase in a particular workflow, again, in revenues, the value of adding an additional customer to your basically bottom line. What does that cost you? And you can work backwards by estimating the cost of your AI solution. How much percentage increase in the current revenues do you need to create in order to, for this ROI to make sense? And so it's a quite different approach. One is more influenced by established solutions and what you've heard, what the potential of these AI solutions is. And then the other approach is a little bit more bottom up. So the key steps in the comprehensive ROI solution, that's the one that you have a reference point. You'll select the metric that matters. So revenue is typically linked to some success metrics, whether it's higher conversion rates, more customers through the door, whatever have you. So you link it to the to some specific metric. You quantify that metric so you know how much money that's bringing in. You do a cost estimation, and you would figure out basically there's an easy formula to a standard formula to calculate the ROI. So basically, ultimately, in sales lead scoring, what you want to know. So for example, if you wanted to increase the number of leads that are coming through your sales pipelines, you want to make sure that you're paying attention to the customers that are responding to your lead forms that have the highest propensity to buy. So how do you know when you have 100 leads, who do you call first and how do you prioritize? If I was to implement an AI system and it told you, it ranked, gave you an ordered list and prioritized list of people to call, and the matter of introducing that system will increase your sales by, let's say, 30%, would that be impactful? And would that be worth, and then I'll put a figure onto it, it's going to cost you $20,000. Will that be of benefit to you? And so it becomes an easy comparable to with some numbers that are well established in the markets that are reachable by other customers, and then you compare it to the cost. And you determine whether there's basically a net positive value back to the organization, and you consider that basically a done deal, or decide to go with a different solution if it doesn't make sense. But anything that I've missed there?
No.
From you?
No, pretty much sums it up. I really like the incremental ROI where you just say, okay, let's just assume 1% improvement. Where would we get already with that? And but also you can have different processes, like different starting points for your personal AI journey with your company. You can say, okay, 1% here or here, like which one will be the most beneficial from the start? So we start with that one, because that's what we usually, when we work with companies and their AI approaches, we try to pinpoint the 1, 2, 3 processes that are actually impactful. That's the strategy for the next 12 months and go for it. Because, yeah, that's what we need for people not to go out and tell everyone there is no ROI. Yeah.
And that becomes like a more of, I really like that analogy, because it becomes like an apples to apples comparison. So if you really understand the value of a 1% improvement in, again, like a time saving, what is a minute in a specific, or a 1% improvement in a specific process worth? What is a 1% improvement in cost savings worth in a particular process? And then you can also prioritize projects. I think that's a really great point that I think harder to do with a comprehensive ROI when you're just, again, benchmarking against what else other people are doing in the industry and what results they're achieving, where you can truly incur the incremental ROI and do a almost like a comparison for what's more valuable for us to implement. And again, there's some calculation that goes into it from a cost perspective, because AI systems do cost, and ultimately you want to implement systems that give you a net ROI, but it gives you an additional benefit that you can compare against and like really do an apples to apples comparison. One other benefit with the gradual improvements is that you can do this for very complex projects where you do have a longer term horizon for implementing these systems. So let's say you think it's possible to achieve, let's say, a 30% improvement, but you can achieve that in year 3. So you probably are gonna front load a lot of the benefits initially, and you're going to achieve incremental improvement over time. But then at the same time, it's actually the effects are bigger because you reach that exponential scale and flywheel effect. But your system is going to continue improving, not as a result of further investment. It's actually going to improve as a result of further feedback. And of course, there's going to be cost maintenance. But ultimately, you're projecting that net result over a longer duration of period. And then you're promising some incremental improvement. And again, even if it improves 1% over the existing process, or it's a net 1% positive over the amount invested, you're still winning. So you're still, and you're actually going to reach higher scale and more benefits over the long term if you can commit to that path. You just have to have the patience with it of realizing that timeline of reaching exponential scale. Well, so
I would love to add one last thing, and then I think we have it covered pretty well. Mm-hmm. I've also read on LinkedIn some marketing agency owner. He was like, I forbid my people using ChatGPT and because our results are not good and they are only good if I'm tinkering around a lot and why should I do it? And I was like, that doesn't make any sense because yeah, of course you have to tinker around. That's what I say, put the work in. But then you have a repeatable system which you can improve. And I also always work with samples and rules that you hand over. People using the system don't even see them, but they are in the background and they can automatically improve by AI. The AI can improve itself without needing any training or whatsoever, just by updating its own rules based on the user gives a thumbs up or thumbs down for the message. So yeah, that's something to keep in mind. Like Svetlana said, the system will improve if you design it properly. And that's why I always tell, get yourself an expert. The value you get from investing a bit more into your strategy upfront will hugely improve any ROI you could have achieved without. Because, of course, you could argue this is a standpoint which is beneficial for someone consulting on AI. Mm-hmm. But it's not making it less true, because there's, you need someone who really has experience, who really thinks in the right direction, in the right path, to set you up properly. Because when we are done, usually you can go and hand it to everyone who can build even at least some AI application, and he will deliver you a proper system, but you have to put in the work beforehand.
I would say it totally resonates with me, and I think it's maybe also historically has come maybe the pitfall of AI, and why again there's so many failed projects is because people think that they can figure things out without an expert, because they're seeing this as yet another IT project. So we'll figure it out. Just how difficult could it be? Except I think, and you've been in the space for such a long time, it's not an easy thing to transition from just, let's say, mobile or traditional software development and then just jump into AI and be an expert. It does take a really long time to actually learn this stuff. And that's another reason why you can't promise ROI systems.
It's not only learning, it's this whole mindset shift. Developers, your development team, how it works today without AI is by design set up the wrong way. By design, you people think the wrong way. Because we programmers, we think sequentially, we think in loops, we think in if statements, stuff like that. AI doesn't work like that, and you have to completely switch it. You have to start from, like, how would I build it if I only would use AI? And then you add the classical stuff to it. And that's how you have to approach it. And this is, like I said, that's why an expert is so important and so helpful, if it's a good expert, of course, because he can bring in this mindset, teach your people, bring them up to speed, and enable you to do stuff you wouldn't be able without.
And I would say that's exactly you're basically shortcutting the time, the learning path.
Yeah.
So instead of figuring it out over a long term, you get expert guidance ultimately of walking you through that process and really distinguishing the differences. But then also the upskilling and the training is so crucial. But ultimately, I do say that even though you're bringing the expert, hopefully you are upskilling your teams, internal teams, over time. That's like the whole benefit is not to be continuing to be handheld. It's actually bringing that expert to actually like upskill and instill that mindset into your folks, if that's going to be part of your culture going forward, because you want your internal teams also to be upskilled and you want them to adapt to that mindset from a trained expert. So just want you to like, do not undervalue someone who is very experienced in this space and bringing them in to help expedite some of the deployment and realizing the ROI of your solutions.
Yes. Okay, I think we are done for today. It was interesting. Yeah, I think we will have to do some more content on that. Yeah. Interesting topic. Hugely beneficial if you get the right mindset and you get the right decisions and the right strategy in line. Mm-hmm. Then you can reach benefits that no other software project has reached for you in the last two decades. And that's a big thing to just have in mind, the gap between prototype and scalable product is as huge as it ever was, because we working with different systems with a different mindset. A is not B anymore, and that's okay. You can deal with it. You just have to know how, and then you can get your returns.
Awesome. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Again, as we mentioned, we prepared a guide for you this time. We will include a link in the description for you to download it. Again, we invested a lot of time actually putting together and together with Edgar to make sure that it's visually appealing, but then it's also, it gives you the step-by-step guidance with examples for how to actually think through each one of those methods. So I honestly think it's gold. It's probably one of the first guides and the most comprehensive guides we've provided. So cannot recommend it more. So, and if there's anything else, say again.
Love the confidence. But yeah, it is
good. Of course.
Yeah, it is good.
I think it's totally gold. I'm really proud of it.
Give this to all your project leads and they will be able to, give you better numbers for your AI project. Yeah.
We're just cross-promoting it. Yeah, yeah. Would love your feedback. If there's anything that we could improve or do less of, the intro that I did today, totally happy with it. We'd love to hear your feedback. So let us know. Don't forget to subscribe. And I guess we'll see you on the next one.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.